Tehillim 126, Perek Kof Chaf Vav. This mizmor is one of the most famous of all the Shirei HaMa'alot. We can divide the mizmor into two equal parts, each characterized by the concept of return in its opening section. The first part is in the past tense, the second part is either in the future or the imperative. We begin. Shir HaMa'alot, a song of ascents. B'shuv Hashem et Shivat Zion hayinu kecholmim. When God returned Zion to its previous state of tranquility, or when he returned to Zion, the people who had been exiled from it, hayinu kecholmim, we felt like dreamers, we couldn't believe it. Or the joy was so great that we felt like the troubles we had had in the past was only a dream. The Targum interestingly renders this as we felt like people who were recovering from an illness, comparing the exile to a severe illness, from the word hachlama, to recover. In any case, we have this idea of people saying, I can't believe what has happened, because now the situation has changed. As imalei sechok pinu, then our mouths are filled with laughter, ulshonenu rina, and our tongues with singing. We are so joyful, our mouths are filled with laughter and song. And the nations then provide an assessment of this, not us. As yomru bagoyim, the nations will say, higdil Hashem la'asotim ele. God has done great things with these people. Notice the use of ele. They still can't bear to mention our names. They're astonished by the reversal of fortune that we've undergone. But they recognize Hashem's intervention. Now, the return to Zion after 70 years of Babylonian exile is quite unique in history. It's very, very rare to see a nation that was totally displaced and disenfranchised return and resettle in their homeland as a sovereign nation. So Rav Elchanan Samet asks, what was so special about this return that the nations also acknowledged it? Why was it possible, and why didn't it happen to any other nations that were exiled? We know the Babylonian geopolitical policy was to unsettle and resettle nations and to exile them to different countries. And Rav Elchanan suggests there were three factors that made this return, Shivat Zion, possible. First of all, we tenaciously preserved our national and religious identity. We did not assimilate among the Babylonians, and we kept waiting for the possibility of return to Zion, hoping for a change in political circumstance. Other nations began a process of assimilation, and even if they didn't assimilate, they adjusted and showed no new desire to return to their homeland. The second factor is that the Babylonians did not settle other nations in Eretz Yehuda, unlike what the Assyrians had done in the Shomron in the north, and the exile was short enough, so the nation stayed in a status of ruin and desolation. People weren't interested. So we could return. Nobody else wanted that place. This was not the situation regarding other places where people had been exiled. Other nations seized them or invaded them, so it was harder for them to return to their land. And of course, the most important factor, at least on the political scenario, was the fall of Babel and the rise of Persia, at the head of which stood a king like Cyrus the Great. He was conciliatory, and definitely part of his policy was to allow people to go home if they wished. We seized the advantage. We took that chance, and we returned to Zion, rebuilt the temple, and restored the land of Yehuda and Yerushalayim. I'm sure that other nations around us were really impressed by how quickly and dramatically the situation changed. Hashem overturned the process, humbled the nations, and raised others so that we could return to our land. The prophecy that of the Nevi'im was fulfilled. The nations were able to acknowledge, Higdil Hashem la'asotim ele, that God did great things for these. Moving on to Pasuk Gimel, we then respond, Higdil Hashem la'asotimanu, God did great things with us. Hayinu simechim, instead of being like dreamers, we are now joyful. We hear it from other people, so we know it's not a dream. And notice the move from the nonverbal joy in the first verse to a verbal response, Higdil Hashem la'asotim imanu, in this verse. And now we turn to pray for the future. Shuvah Hashem et shiviteinu. Hashem, return or change our captivity. Ka'afikim ba'negev, like the streams in the Negev. Please continue the redemption you have started. But notice how the language Shuvah and Shiviteinu links back to our first verse. Why specifically streams in the Negev? If you know anything about the geography and topography of Israel, the Negev is very dry. Why am I interested in those streams? Well, there are these dry riverbeds in the Negev, which are subject to sudden flash floods, very often without any rain in the near vicinity, but rather flowing down from the mountains. And I think this evokes the image of redemption coming without an apparent immediate cause, but rather happening miraculously. It's also a cry for a broad, massive, and all-embracing return to the land. The initial response to the call to settle the land was small. So here we ask, please help us make it a massive return, a massive resettlement. This could also be a prayer simply for rain and agricultural success, even in a place like the Negev, and that will facilitate our ability to hold on to the land. And then we describe the situation of a farmer. Hazorim b'dima, those that plant with tears, b'rina yiktzoru, will reap with joy. When we plant, we cry in prayer, hoping that the crop will succeed. And then when we reap it, we sing in joy at the crop that we've gotten. Now, this could be interpreted literally as representing agriculture and the uncertainty when we plant of what our final result will be, or as a prayer that those who cried as they returned on the ashes of destruction should be joyful with the rebuilding. And then he goes on to expand on that verse. Haloch yelech ubacha, the one who walks along crying, noseh meshech hazara, carrying the bag of seeds. Bo yavo birina, he will certainly come with joy, noseh alumotav, carrying sheaves of wheat. Although the sack is much lighter than the sheaves, he cries at the outset, but rejoices in the end. This mizmor is recited on Yom HaAtzma'ut, as well as after Mincha on Tisha B'Av, with an eye towards the future and the hope. The rabbis tell us that Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av after Mincha, that hope for the future and for redemption. What are we asking for here? We're asking for an accelerated and united response to the opportunity of redemption. In the spirit of the Navi Haggai, who lived through this time period, where in chapter 2 he says, Emorna el Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel pachat Yehuda vel Yoshua ben Yotzadak ha-Kohen ha-Gadol vel Shirit ha-Am le'mor. Speak to the leaders, Zerubbabel, the governor, Yoshua, the high priest, and the people that have come with him. Mi b'chem ha-nishar asher ra'a et ha-bayit hazeh b'chvodo ha-rishon. When they saw the second temple, it was small, it was insignificant. It wasn't the model that you see now when you go to the tunnel tours. That was built at the end of the Second Temple era by Herod. This was a small building that didn't even have a golden menorah. You are those amongst you. This only happened 70 years ago, the destruction. Some of you remember the glory of Shlomo's Beit HaMikdash. Uma atem ro'im oto, and what do you see now? Ata. Halo kamo ka'ayim be'nechem. Don't you think that this building is insignificant, it's like nothing in your eyes, but it represents something. Everybody, strengthen yourself and do. Ki ani itchem ne'um Hashem tzvakot, because I am with you, says God, and I have promised to take care of you. It's going to take a while, but I will shake all the nations out. Everything will turn to you. And then ultimately, gadol yiyeh kvod habayit hazeh acharon min harishon, amar Hashem tzvakot. The glory of this second house, the last house, will be greater than the glory of the first house, says Hashem. U'bemakom hazeh eten shalom, and in this place, I will give peace, Ne'um Hashem Tzvakot, says God. May we merit to that speedily in our days. Have a wonderful day.